Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. I am your host, Crazy Dale Key, from Spook Show, no less. But you know that. Welcome, everyone, and happy Horror Days. And I spell Days D-A-Z-E. That's right, it's time to not travel anymore in motorized vehicles and kick back with a few adult beverages. Such as this lovely Moscato I am sampling right now. So welcome to the Eerie House office party. It looks like Evil Annie Ruppert is here. And I keep seeing Dave Binkley winking in and out. Thanks for joining. And no real topic today. Hoping for some callers here at 646-378-0264. I really didn't want to drone on and on about some of the cheesy holiday films. That's been pretty much done to death. We did a show on that a few months ago, so I don't think I'm going to spend a great deal of time talking about those kind of films, although we tend to drag them out. For example, my own Hex Spawn. Children are upstairs right now watching the Science Theater, the one with Santa Claus and the Devil, the Mexican film. Yay, good times, right? That's how it's going here in Erie House. How was your holidays, folks? Here we are, it's Christmas Eve. And we're hoping Santa Claus leaves some keys to a brand new hearse out in the Erie House parlor. I leave him some diabetic-free cookies or something like that. Maybe that'll happen. But how are your holidays, folks? Did you get everything done you wanted to do? Buy the gifts you wanted to buy? Take care of what you wanted to take care of? What is your holiday horror viewing? What do you like to kick back and watch during the holiday? In the horror, sci-fi, and or fantasy genre. I mean, there's always the classic Christmas television shows that are somewhat horror-related. The very Grinch himself, voiced by Boris Karloff. By the way, I always want to say Boris. It's Boris Karloff. A holiday tradition that we mustn't forget. And I had to catch a few people at work this week who felt that it was Boris singing "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch." But no! That song was sung by Thurles Ravenscroft, the voice of Tony the Tiger from the Sugar Frosted Flakes commercials. And he's the guy who sang the "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch" song. We have a caller here in Erie House. Hello, caller.
Ho, 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 Dale.
Hey, it's Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad. Welcome.
You know, the sad thing about as much of a wonderful Christmas special as that was, Dr. Mm-hmm. Seuss' Ted Geisel was embarrassed by the fact that after it was all done and completed, they realized that Thurles named the guy that sang, Tony the Tiger, you know, that sang "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch," never got listed in the credits.
Yeah. That's disappointing. Because the guy had a really, distinct voice.
He did. I mean, I'm thinking, wasn't he also the guy that did the voice of Captain Crunch? I'm not sure,
but I know he was on a Disney recording. I think it was for one of the rides, and it's a often played song at the Halloween time, "Grim Grinning Ghosts." And again, you hear he's one of the singers in that song, and such a wonderful deep
voice.
Well,
he was insane with the Spike Jones group in one of the 1950s songs where they did Wyatt Earp, He Makes Me Burp. And he was one of the singers in that.
No kidding.
Yeah. You can't mistake that voice, I'm telling you.
No. It's there'll never be another just like him either. I mean, you know who else had a
Where you hide the liquor, Dale?
Where am I hiding it?
It's all over the place, man. Eggnog.
I don't nog.
And you don't nog?
I do not nog. I have never partaken of eggnog. Never. Not even a taste.
I haven't either. That was going to be my first time. What a disappointment.
No, I like a nice Christmas wine. I like a nice Moscato, which is probably something fruitier than I should drink, but it's a nice wine. It's a nice red wine. Which, of course, I'm drinking for health benefits only, right?
Absolutely.
Mm.
I know Eddie Cantor used to, during the Ziegfeld Follies days, used to share a room in the boarding house with W.C. Fields. And I guess the first time he met Fields, you know, Fields kept saying, okay, let's drink to your health, and let's have another one to your health. Eddie said, we drank to my health till he damn near ruined it.
Yeah, so he got sick.
Yeah.
Fields was something. Have you seen the Rod Steiger, WC and Me film?
I did. It's been quite some time. I really do need to revisit that, but yeah.
I wonder how historically accurate it is.
When he went in to shoot his scripts, he only had 12 pages of script.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it was basically done on the fly.
Yeah, he was a quick wit, and he was also as equally adept with his hands. I think at one point he was a juggler. That's where he learned a lot of those hat tricks, you know, that he did.
He did that in vaudeville, yeah.
Fun. Speaking of old-time stuff, we might as well spring it.
Yes.
Yes. In 2 weeks.
We had talked about it on the after party last time. I think we've talked about it before.
Yeah, and a little offline. And what we're going to do is we're going to introduce some retro radio here on Erie House. It's something I've been toying for quite some time. Had talked about it with others, and Mr. Binkley suggested we start with, Saturday, 2 weeks from today, Saturday, January 7th, and we're going to feature Lights Out, the Poltergeist episode.
That's one of my, there were a lot of great episodes of that, but that is the one that made me turn on the lights afterwards. I don't know if you guys
yeah.
that one yet, but I'm telling you, that's a great episode of Lights Out.
Yeah. No, I'm not replacing this show. It's going to be an additional bonus show. I haven't decided when it's regularly going to run, but we're going to premiere it right here on this show in 2 weeks. because there is a ton of available material that I'd like to share with you. David and I have talked previously about doing, you know, old-time radio, and we figured, why not? Let's do it now.
And with your new hour expanded, it gives us the time to share a complete half-hour episode and still give us plenty of time to talk and let others call in and talk about it as well. I mean, it's
sure.
I think that's a
can
really...
Can even squeeze in a couple of them. There's some of them are rather short. Some of the Lights Out and some, I think, Seasons of Suspense were shorter shows.
Yeah, by the time they got to them, they were 25 minutes, including commercials, towards the end of the suspense run. You even wipe out those commercials, and you're right, you're down to about 16 minutes worth of program.
Yeah.
But there's so
I like
many
sharing the old commercials, too, though, because that's a part of the history of when these shows were new.
You know, there's so much that is done through the the theater of the mind, the radio dramas. And we talked about a whole group of genre of horror stories, of shows, and even those that weren't some of the, you know, some of the wonderful escapes. Three Skeleton Key is a great one. The Leiningen versus the Ants, another one. Just wonderful, wonderful, and so well done.
Well, you know, it's funny. You and I, David, we both like films, right?
Yes. I loved actual radio before I loved film the way I do.
Yeah?
I think it was junior high. And I had, I went to our public library. The radio programs were really kind of hard to get back then. They were pretty expensive to buy, too.
Yeah.
And I got out some Fibber McGee and Molly, and I got out, on the other hand, I got out some Inner Sanctum Mysteries. And between those two, I fell in love with radio comedy and radio drama when I was in junior high school.
No kidding. I was only exposed to a few things, including the classic version of Orson Welles presenting War of the Worlds, due to its impact on its first broadcast. But I really was not exposed until much later when I got satellite radio and had the ability to listen to these on long trips. As you know, I have a long commute to my regular job. Yes, I have to do a real job thing. It was very nice listening to entire episodes, not just of the horror stuff, you know, the suspense, the lights out, the sci-fi stuff like X-1, Dimension X, but
right. All
the variety shows and the comedies, like you mentioned. It's just so much fun.
And certain things I think you appreciate more when you're older than when I really first started liking it. You know, Fred Allen is not someone I appreciated when I was younger, but I really do now, realizing that basically he was the head writer, kept every script of every show he ever did in his personal library. Just a Red Skelton, what he would do on the radio, and what also transferred straight to television, you know.
Yeah. And we've talked about how
never a script in his life, I think.
I think you and I talked before, too, how a lot of radio shows commuted over to television, but the medium itself is not too far from the ability to use your own imagination, very comparable to reading a book, I would say. Granted, there's sound effects and the characters are given voices, but as to the visual action, you still are required to use your own imagination to play these stories out in your head, be it a Western, be it a comedy skit, or be it a scary horror story.
Yeah, and I know that we had talked about you wanting to do it at some point, and I'm sure we will attempt it at some time here, but I did have the opportunity to do about 30 full half-hour radio dramas, and out of those, I did actually write a majority of those. I had a couple of other people I met through the Internet who submitted stories. One I always always felt bad because I always changed the endings, but he always admitted that what I did to it was better than how he had it. But the opportunity to do some 30-minute dramas in honor of, you know, the radio mystery theater and things like that. That was really, really kind of my schooling as to how a radio drama program should be done. And they did everything. They did everything from comedy to horror to straight drama to romance, everything they did. I mean, they were on for, close to 11 years on every single night.
I even enjoyed some of the detective stories like Johnny Dollar and some of the others. just really good. And they're
so when Howard Duff did Sam Spade, it was absolutely hilarious. It was so well done and hilarious at the same time.
Can you imagine that Sam Spade would later become Floyd the Barber?
Did he really?
Yeah.
Howard Duff is
Floyd the Barber.
Oh, no, that's Howard McNear.
Oh, you're
right. He was Doc on Gunsmoke. Yeah.
You're right.
He was on every 1950s radio show that CBS had, I think.
Yes, I stand corrected. He was around a lot. The guy who did the satellite show, he was very well versed on these and knew a lot of the history and, you know, could introduce all the actors. And it was a kind of a clique, I guess. A lot of the voice actors, they knew each other very well.
Well, same as William Conrad, who would, I think, really his first television success, he was the announcer of the Rocky and Bullwinkle show.
Mm-hmm.
But his first, you know, then his voiceover, as his voice he used for The Fugitive, then after that he got a chance to be Cannon, and did a couple other series after that. But
yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. As Howard McNear was, he was all over CBS. So, you know, he would do the opening for Suspense most of the time when he didn't do it, Paul Frees would, but, you know, Tired of the Everyday Grind. That was he started off with William Conrad doing that. And he did bit parts on other shows like Night Beaten and everyone else's shows as well.
Yeah.
Like Bad Guys,
I was surprised.
Guys and everything.
I was surprised how prolific Agnes Moorehead was on radio as well.
Actually made more appearances on Suspense than any other actor. And, of course, her Sorry Wrong Number, she did that, I think she did that 11 times for Suspense. It wasn't re-recorded. It was live performance every time.
Yeah, she was a busy one.
Well, and that's why she was surprised when Rod Serling sent her the script for A Twilight Zone he wanted her to be in. She read through it and said she was known as the voice, and she knew that. So, well, what's my part? And he says, well, you're the gal. And she didn't say a word because...
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler alert. Oh, you know, she did. She couldn't. How's that?
That's funny. And you had mentioned Twilight Zone. It's, you know, a lot of us our age think of the Twilight Zone and the Outer Limits as the, you know, original anthology series, but again, classic radio predates it and really sets up a lot of what Twilight Zone did. I mean, they had a lot of the stories with the twist endings and...
You know, there was just recently, being probably about 8 years ago now, was a recording, because Rod worked in radio before he worked on television, certainly. Living in mm-hmm. Cincinnati, I went to university down there, and they recovered one of his radio dramas that he wrote and produced. And you really could see a lot of what the future of the Twilight Zone would be. And this was probably 4 to 5 years before Twilight Zone.
No kidding.
So you can see a lot of that in this.
I know. I like the Hermit's Cave. Those are some of the earlier ones. Those are late 30s, mid-30s.
The Hermit's Cave and the Witch's Tale were even predated the Lights Out, which actually that came in 35, and yet those two predated Lights Out.
Yeah. Yeah, and those shows really, I'm not sure which came first. I would have to say radio came first before you had your live spook shows in the movie theaters. And again, these are the origins of the modern, you know, horror hosts that you have today. You know, you have a creepy character introducing these, you know, exciting tales.
You know what? If you're going to go by creepy character, you'd almost have to go, I would think, well, those two there, what really stands out for me is a Raymond on Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And telling bad jokes about death and ghosts and whatever, you know.
This is where you get your punsters long before EC Comics, you know, the Crypt Keeper and those kinds of characters, these predate them, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll just travel down the road and put in a bunch of different the dramas from yesterday and see how well they stand out. But, you know, you got to tell everybody, make sure they turn off their lights when they're supposed to. It's just not fair.
It is. It's cool when you're driving in a car, you can kind of make your mind go a little blank as long as you're paying attention to traffic, I guess. But yeah, I've always felt if, God forbid, I should ever lose my sight, I would ensure that I've got every bit of radio I could get, you know, to enjoy while, you know. Because it is fun to lay back in your bed with your eyes closed or on a couch or somewhere dark and listen to these great shows and let your mind, you know, imagine all these situations.
I do have, I do some work with a blind, and he loves the radio dramas more than anything else. We do a radio drama every night at 9 o'clock, an old radio drama, and he says for an hour every day, he gets his sight back because of that. And for an hour every day.
That's absolutely wonderful, and I can not fully understand, but I can understand to a degree, you know, how enjoyable it must be, because I think when you lose a sense, your other senses become heightened, and, you know, you do have to rely on your imagination and your memory in that case, I suppose, you know, to envision these great stories. Some of them are scary as hell, like you said. You want to turn the light back on right away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking off the monster on the newsreel and the spider. These are just some of the ones from Lights Out. I would never want to crawl up inside of Arch Obler's head, let me tell you.
Yeah. There were a lot of good ghost stories, too, with either ironic or creepy or surprise ending.
There was Rod Serling thought for the most part the radio was kind of a waste, but there were two writers. I'm trying, Norman Corwin and Arch Obler were the two things that Rod Serling thought made radio and radio drama worthwhile. That's the only two things that Rod really. And think of many of these Lights Out programs that you've heard, then you look at The Twilight Zone. They're taking, in many times, ordinary people and putting them in an extraordinary circumstance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just really,
I think it
really
cool. To make and present these types of stories, too, I think, takes a great deal of creative inventiveness to, you know, put together these stories so that the audience, you know what I mean, gets just enough and then uses their imagination the rest of the way of these stories, you know, with just the audio medium, much in the way with that Lon Chaney Sr., you know, not having grown up with deaf mute to parents, I believe, he was able to emote and express himself through use of gestures and even, you know, his posture and everything. He had the medium of no sound, so it's kind of like the opposite of radio. It was all visual and no sound, and he was able to quite brilliantly, you know, portray all these great characters. Similarly, radio, you know, has to create with the audio medium only. And I think I think that's great creativity in the making.
I would think if you had to do the two, I think that making movies without sound would be, in many ways, a lot more difficult than making the radio.
Well, it would seem today. I would tend to agree because it seems so much harder to watch a silent film than it is to listen to an old radio show.
And it's a shame because there are some, I know you've mentioned it before, and I think it's absolutely tremendous the way that Penny Dreadful has done a number of silent films, and I applaud her on that. That's very courageous thing to do, because you've done at least one that I know of, and people do go out upon occasion, but that's a courageous thing to do, because you have to make a stand-up, because you have to have total attention at all times on that screen for a silent movie.
You're right, and it was challenging. I when I did The Lost World, I laid down an entire new audio track, because number one, I think it's harder for today's audience to take it seriously when you got a piano going rink dink 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 dink. You know what I mean? Where I found some royalty free orchestral music that gave, I think, the movie a little more depth. And a little more somber with the giant beasts in the film. It's difficult to do those. Those films are so classic. Those are ones that I also would not want to put comedic sound effects in. You know what I mean? It's one thing to maybe change a musical track, which, you know, a purist might not like that idea, but at the same time, you know, a fresher audience might appreciate it more.
Oh, you know, the soundtrack may have been what they're used to, but when it's played in the theaters, it was whatever the person on the organ played.
Yeah.
If they had an organist. If they didn't have an organist, it played without any sound, without any accompaniment. You know?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and
purist be darned.
What's that?
The purist be darned is what I said.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to bring these to newer audiences, it is, I think, more helpful to have, again, a more modern-sounding orchestra to it, because I wouldn't want to, as I mentioned, you know, my style with the really bad movies is to put the crazy drop-ins, but I can't do it with the silent films out of just my incredible respect for how old they are to have lasted the test of time. Movies like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Nosferatu, The Golem, anything Janie Sr. was in, which are numerous. Metropolis. These films are timeless, and to mock them out would seem extremely disrespectful to me.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, I leave the silliness for outside the movie. I do like to respect the movie, even as bad as they are. Leave them the way they were. You know, that's pretty much what Big Chuck did. And I do respect the movies enough and all the work that went into them. Because even if you look at it, you can have a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. Think of the worst Ed Wood movie you could watch. Look how many people it still took to make that movie.
Yeah. Manos and Hands of Fate. Manos, Hands of Fate. Need I say more?
No.
It's a nightmare of a film, but it's a little, I was heavily influenced by The Ghoul, and there are other horror hosts who put in, you know, crazy sound effects in the movies as well.
Yes, there are.
And so, you know, some movies I just can't resist. There's so many opportunities.
And that's why I always enjoy watching the other horror hosts that are out there and showing their things and seeing how they presented it differently than I did, just in that and in the movie itself at times. You know, so.
Oh, I absolutely. Everybody has their own style, their own way of presenting, the film. And I think it's refreshing to see some people do it differently. Have you seen this new guy that's out there now? He's just done a couple shows, Slash. He's a werewolf guy.
What he's done yet.
I had the good fortune of discovering this guy right as he was putting together his very first show. You know, I tried to encourage him, whatever. I'm not saying I had a big influence on him, because he does a fine show all by himself. And it's neat. He's like this werewolf guy with a gruff voice. He's kind of a sarcastic, wise guy. He's got this spider Dewey that's kind of bothers him while he's trying to present the show. And he's neat. He's new. It's a brand new show. I think he'll be on the Vortex soon.
Well, that's fabulous. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that. I guess I always enjoy watching how others present their movies and have the good fortune of getting to watch some of the other guys that host movies watch ours on like the Vortex. You know, it's just It's an interesting family, shall we say?
Yeah,
the hosting
community. it is dysfunctional at times, but still a wide range of interesting characters. Like, and all of them bring their own thing to the forefront when they do their shows.
Yes, they do. You know, it's good. They
in
are
some
just,
way, shape, or form. You gotta love them all.
Yes. So we have just put out our most recent Being Christmas Time. We went down to Castle Noel in Medina, and I don't know if you've ever been there.
I've read about it a bit, but I saw you were doing the show down there. How did that come out?
Very interesting. Actually, it's the first time I did a show without including any of our sketches. Mike Mace and I went down there. Basically, we spent the day. We had the run of the place, pretty much. It's just such an awesome place. They have all these Christmas storefront windows out of New York and such, and recreation of the Christmas Story slide. And they've got over 400 items from the Grinch Who Stole Christmas movies, and from all parts memorabilia from all three of the Tim Allen Christmas Santa Claus movies, and Jingle All the Way, all these, you know, and so many other things, as well as interesting displays of an entire room of things where you go through and say, I had that, and it's just different toys and games and things like that, that you cannot go through that without saying you had at least a dozen of those things. And we didn't have a lot of things, but I could go through and find at least a dozen things there that I had.
Oh, wow. You know, you're sending me down memory lane at this time of year. And, you know, of course, horror movies are one of my favorites, science fiction, but fantasy movies too. And there's a movie that I miss that was always, always on this time of year, and that was the Babes in Toyland with Laurel and Hardy.
Now, the original black and white version, I believe, is in public domain. The colorized version
really
is not.
Ah. That was such a fun movie, and it was always on television at this time of year.
Yeah, Laurel and Hardy did about four operettas, and that was one of them. And that was Victor Herbert's Babes in Toyland. And very interesting to see them in this twiddle-dee and twiddle-dum worked in and gave them extra things to do that made them kind of the focal part of it as much as they could without taking away from the Victor Herbert music and storyline.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But that was such a fun fantasy film. I miss it being on regular TV.
Yeah, well, they come through their spurts. I'm surprised, you know, because Abbott Costello come through every once in a while. They come back, and all of a sudden they're hot for a while, and then Laurel and Hardy's hot. But that's, you know, the Marx Brothers. But that doesn't happen as much as it used to be. It happened a lot more when your hometown TV station had an afternoon movie and had a Sunday movie and a weekend movie. You know, all these different things were going on. I think you got a lot more of the themes and these types of things that happened. Now, even with all these cable channels, you may catch an Abbott Costello here and there. You may catch a Laurel and Hardy here and there, but you don't really get the full push. I mean, I've been kind of waiting for the Ritz Brothers to come back and really see a lot of theirs, and nobody is really showing them.
I know, and you brought, again, you sparked more memories of what was on TV in those days. The jungle movies, you know, all the Jungle Jim and Tarzan movies. The Blondie, the Arthur Lake and Penny Singleton Blondie movies were a hoot. I just watched one the other day just for the heck of it.
They had about, what, 13 of those, something like that? And then they took the same characters to television for a series, a season or two.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were great together, those two, as Blondie and Dagwood. And then, of course, Mr. Dithers moved on, and they had Mr. Radcliffe, I think, was the boss after a while. He bought out Dithers and Dithers.
Ah.
And then the kids grew up. I mean, it was cool. You watched the kids grow up. Daisy had her pups, and it was fun.
Oh,
it was a fun movie.
My boys had it, too. So we had a Betamax, because I had a bunch of – picked up a Betamax and a bunch of Beta tapes from a school auction. And so at one point, I think I had all the Blondie movies because my oldest son fell in love with them. So,
yeah.
So we had that.
Yep. The Ma and Pa Kettle movies. And
oh, those were a hoot.
I remember for a long time, Big Chuck was showing a lot, not just the horror ones back in the day, but all of the East Side Kids or Dead End Kids, if you will. You know, the Hunt Hall and Leo Gorcey movies.
Yeah, they showed the Bowery Boys. You know, the East Side Kids are... those are public domain, but the Bowery Boys are not in public domain. And those are the ones that I remember seeing on television more than the East Side Kids, with the Bowery Boy ones. And they were all older than, they were partly boys, but always between Hunts Hall and Leo Gorcey, you know, always enough silliness, slapstick, and moitering of the English language to go around on those.
Oh, yeah, well, Gorcey had a great patter of myrtleating them.
Yep.
English language, absolutely. but their monster crossover, they did a number with a number of films with Lugosi.
Yeah, they did, Ghost on the Loose and...
Spooks Run Wild. Spooks Run Wild.
Yes, yeah.
Which you hosted. That's one of yours. Was it the Bowery at Midnight also had Lugosi?
You know what? I'd have to check that out. I'm not sure.
I think it does. I think it does.
It very well could be. Yeah, because, well, let's face it, Bela Lugosi would grab at anything that they would send his way.
Yeah. A lot of those were pretty formulaic, too. They'd be in a haunted mansion and go from room to room to room to room.
Yep. Some would get lost from being grabbed from behind a secret wall and things like that.
Yeah. They had some good side characters, too. You know, some of the other gang members, they would change over the years. But early on, Sammy Morrison, he was great.
Yes, he was.
But... yeah, I like the Bowery Boys. I can watch them anytime. Just so many different themed up things they would have, like you said, on television. And then even into the 70s, the made-for-TV movies were a real hoot.
Well, again, that was something that all networks do. Almost every night, one network or another had a movie going. And between NBC and CBS. And now they don't produce any movies, I don't think.
No, you see channels like AMC is going crazy with some of their series they're coming up with. They've presented out very much like a movie. You know, some of these Walking Dead episodes are an hour and a half, and granted there's a boatload of commercials. But it plays out like a movie, a lot of the episodes. I'm still a fan of Walking Dead.
My son, that's, I think, is his favorite show, my youngest. And you know what? I have a hard time getting into the whole zombie genre.
Yeah.
But it does, it is interesting. But I just... I guess, Dale, that's just one thing I don't understand. Is all the I guess because anybody can be a zombie. Is that what it is?
Well, it's let's put it this way. It's a soap opera with zombies, and you learn to care about the what they're doing is making you care about the characters, and they have some tremendous villains from time to time. You learn that the zombies are really a background danger, that the real danger is other people and how they behave when they come into power or misbehave.
Okay.
and I think that's basically what the whole franchise is all about, from the comic books onto the television show. And I have not read the comic. I don't read the comic. I want to. But that's going to be a financial undertaking to collect all the episodes, you know, all the back issues, but in a time thing too. But
that's one of those shows that went into syndication. That some of those shows, when they come from cable, going to a regular broadcast channel, and I'm trying to think whether 43 or something like that has that once a week or something like that. Does that have to change a lot for the regular broadcast channels?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because there's so many of the other things, you could never show The Sopranos the way that HBO did.
Yeah.
And they did. But they were
because
really
of the content.
They were softened up before they went to syndication.
They might have to do that with Walking Dead. But right now, their stuff is available on both Netflix and on, you know, their old episodes, and on Amazon
right.
Prime. But you want to know true horror? I never miss football games.
My cable bill.
I never miss football games. I thought the Browns were playing. I thought the Browns were playing tomorrow.
Uh oh. So you missed out on the only one they're going to have this year.
Yes, I did. Well, we have guests here in Erie House, and you know it is the holiday season.
Yes, yes.
You're doing radio today? Why, yes. Because it's the holiday.
Merry Christmas. There you go.
Yeah, that's right.
And happy holidays and Merry Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah. I think Hanukkah oddly starts tonight as well. So.
Absolutely. It starts tonight as well. It doesn't usually come that way, but it did this time.
It did this year, so that's kind of neat. And happy holidays to everyone, especially our listeners like Evil Annie Rappert. And others who've been just wonderful this year, you know, with the change that happened over the summer and going over to Erie House. I want to take a minute to thank people like yourself, especially yourself, actually, David, for being a good friend while that happened, while Erie House television went up and went back down. it'll return in some fashion, some way. I'm working on a few things, seeing what might work. I'm fussy. I want to do it a certain way so it looks like old school television, comparable to what Livestream did, but hopefully more reliable. and take it from there.
I just appreciate all that you and all the other services that have done that allows. I help to provide content, but if I don't have people like you and Vortex and others that do this kind of thing, and there are several of them around, the one down in, you know, Peninsula as well, and others that are out there, I wouldn't have anywhere to share my stuff with outside
Absolutely.
Of just where we're camped out. And I really appreciate.
Well, and without material, there's no channel. I mean, people like yourself, people like Tar and Feather, I love their shows too. They're in a different way that I love yours. You know what I mean? It's again, seeing all the different hosts, Screaming Horror Theater, everybody that contributed. Slash, the new gentleman I mentioned to you, just really good host.
You know, so you met him basically you didn't meet him, but you worked with him through the internet.
I stumbled on him
like
on
that.
Facebook, and he was. He put together like this character, and I kind of put a bug in his ear, and he knew about Horror Host. He's from Indiana, so he knows, you know, Sammy Terry and things like that. So before long, he got his hands on an editing system and grabbed some public domain movies and started having at it.
Here's my fear of what we have done, you with the Spook Show, and you know, you had what all of us that have done. But look at, we're all in the same age bracket. You know, the let's be generous, the mid 50s. How's that?
well, there's some that are older and some that are a little younger. But that, yeah, we seem to be in the median.
And so my fear is that one day we have helped to keep this format alive, but who comes after us? That's kind of a scary thing.
Because, well, that's what I love about Slash is I believe he's in his 30s, so that's a little youth and enthusiasm working it there. You know, I mean, guys like Rigor Mortis, Wild Thingdom, Misty Brew, Lord Bloodra, Meat Cleaver Theater, all the folks who were contributing to Eerie House, most of them are our age because we grew up with this stuff on regular television.
And we obviously have done it for the love of it, not for the money. And it's interesting because I think in some cases, and you know, certainly not beating Big Chuck, but most of your cases, most of your horror hosts didn't really do it by choice. You'd have to go to Zachary who really did it by choice. He loved doing it and continued to do it place after place. But most people did it for the paycheck. When that was gone, so were they. And we have done it because of their influence, of what they did and what they presented. And that's what we do through the love of watching what they did.
You know who's a funny exception? Is Arachna. I don't think she had Horror Hosts where she's from. I don't know of any from Colorado. And I haven't talked to her at length about it, but I don't really hear her often referencing anybody, you know, other than Elvira, who came much later and was national. But I haven't heard her really discuss any of the classics that she may have been influenced by.
Well, you know, we were just so fortunate here in Northeast Ohio with not only Goulardi and Houlihan and Big Chuck and Big Chuck and Little John and Superhost and the Ghoul and the Son of the Ghoul. These were all broadcast people. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Some people hardly had any, if any.
Yeah,
and,
or if they did, they lasted a year, one and done, and they're out. But, we've had not only had them, but had them for a long, long time. I mean, look at the incredible history behind Big Chuck.
Yes. Yes.
You know, 40-some years of broadcasting.
Wonderful article in the Plain Dealer just this week on 50 years of broadcast, yes.
Yeah, and he's won a couple local Emmys, and deservedly. I mean, his stuff is great stuff.
Yeah, but again, he got paid a little extra for the movie show, but again, he did it because he enjoyed doing it. It was a chance to express himself. Because most of his job was directing the news. That's most of what he did.
Yeah, and like you said, it was not only an opportunity to express himself, but to have some fun with the local community, you know, some self-deprecating humor. It just, it's a great show, that's why I like what you do. Yours is in the same vein. I can't say it's like, but I can't say it's totally unlike Big Chuck's show. It's, you know, you can see the influence, but it's what you do is completely unique and different, and it's a great way to share these classic films.
What's so funny is I go through and watch his show, his Sunday night show, And I say, I didn't realize how many, you know, again, he, most of the jokes I think that we based some of our sketches on go back to vaudeville. So it was not like they were absolutely new to Chuck, although he did have some bits that were completely original. But I find out that doing a sketch that I thought no one had done before, and here I go, Chuck did it 30 years ago, you know?
Yeah. Nothing's really original anymore. It's a new twist and a new wrinkle of old jokes. Sometimes I'm blessed with a good memory, and somebody will say something, and it just wraps itself into a joke that I've heard, and you can just slide in there, and you know what I mean?
The first time I saw one that Chuck did called the Special Effects Man, and it had him where he was there, and he was cutting through this piece of paper, and at the end, he walked through it from the other direction. I'd never seen anything like that before in my life.
That was a well-done thing.
And it could be something that maybe Ernie Kovacs had done, but outside of that, I had never, ever seen anything like that before. It just blew me away.
Yeah.
Because he did do some things that were pretty darn creative.
Yeah.
And when he didn't, he tried to put a creative...
That's why I like playing with the green screen, because you can just make so much happen.
I think our show really improved tremendously when we added the green screen to most of our sketches.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you could be anywhere. You could be in the same room, but you could be anywhere. Any place.
And if you think of it as just layering like a sheet that has only certain part of the action, and it's like compositing. You're putting, making a composition of several film pieces, so they all work together.
Right. Yes, it's a great tool that, you know, that has become available to all of us. Because I know when I first started trying to do it, they just said you have to light everything so much. And now it's just a matter of having even lighting. You don't really have to do that now. They've made it so much better.
If you have the computer that can handle it, these editing programs will let you change the hue of a composite or a piece, so you can match things up. If they are lit appreciably different, you can modify it to blend in better.
Yeah.
Some of them will let you do multiple effects, you know what I mean? And
just absolutely amazing. Like what you did when you were hosting the Lost World. Totally blew me away. I think I wasn't over for 15 minutes. I called your house and said, Dale, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah. Well, you were somebody I wanted to share with because I know you'd make good use of it, and I've seen some of the pieces that you've done, and there's just so much out there that can be used. And if you have, again, the imagination to work it into something, like there was a great one with a dragon flyby. Well, when I did the movie The Flying Dragon, and Clink was, you know, still with us, and we did that show. That was great. I had him bothering me throughout the whole episode with this plastic flying dragon. I kept telling him there's no dragons. There's no such thing as real dragons. And, of course, we have a dragon flyby that blasts us with the fire at the end, you know? And it was such a great green screen. It was really neat. And that was one of the first times I was able to do green screen effectively. I had tried it Unknown Worlds. And I was having an underground adventure in that one. And that was okay, but it didn't come together like the Flying Dragon and the stuff from The Lost World. That was fun to do.
I used the Flying Dragon in Creature Destruction, and Mike and I got in kind of a Abbott Costello-type routine, and I said, Mike, did you see a dragon fly by? He says, well, what's the big deal? There's around water, there are dragonflies all the time. So we did. I didn't say dragonfly. Dragonfly.
Yes.
That's awesome. Kind of led to an Abbott Costello type routine.
There you go. perfect. And it was especially fun in The Lost World, not only, you know, matching up the green screen with the dinosaurs and myself, but finding some good roars, you know, that I could use of the dinosaurs.
What,
that was fun,
did
too.
Did you take, like, a lion's roar and slow it down and such, or?
No, actually, I found some royalty-free dinosaur roars.
Ah, okay.
All different types. Brontosaurus and whatever, but I didn't use them as they were named. I used them as I was looking at the video piece, what I felt the monster should sound like.
Right.
You know, choosing from like maybe a dozen of these monster roars.
Well, because some of them they were in distress when they were fighting, you know, and losing. You know,
yes.
So it would be a different sound.
And the yipe, 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 yipe with the Tyrannosaurus Rex. That was fun. No, but I've got like a Tyrannosaurus, Tyrannosaurus footsteps, Brontosaurus, Allosaurus, baby Triceratops, Brachiosaurus, Brontosaurus, Compsognathosaurus, 1 and 2, Dromaeosaurus, Gallimimus, various T-Rexes, a Velociraptor. So I had all these to choose from, and that was fun, too, putting the audio along with the visual, because, you know, when you put the mediums together, you can create the aura of authenticity that's really happening.
Yeah, because I know that one of our shows that we did down at the Massillon Fire Museum, we put in Charlie Chaplin's The Fireman. And what was really cool about that is somebody had added not only the music, but they added sound effects and, you know, the guys scream, fire, 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 you know, when they were screaming, and the bells clanging when the alarm was on, things like that.
Yeah,
and,
there you go.
See what they made it relevant again. I thought it was really cool.
Yep. Well, that almost does it for the hour. And welcome to the office party. It's a little quiet, but I kind of expected that for the holiday. I mean, people are doing stuff with their families. Yep. But they can always come back into the archives and listen, which still getting a few listens here, and we appreciate the interest in the show. Try to keep it peppy. We'll be back next week, and don't forget, in 2 weeks, David Binkley will be back here with me as we present Lights Out, the story Poltergeist. We'll tell you all about it.
We're going to talk about Arch Obler and the beginning of Lights Out, and that could lead us actually to the second program on Willis Cooper, who was also the guy who really created the show, and what he did afterwards. So could be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it
you don't want to miss
that.
It will
be a lot of fun.
It will.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss that, folks.
Yeah.
And there'll be lots and lots of material for a long time to come. I'm snagging all the public domain radio shows I can in the genre for future shows as well. And I'm hoping other hosts can join and host along with us with these classic radio shows.
I wonder how many of those might have been influenced a bit by some of these old shows. That's again, to find out where their influences are and where they come from, that's a fun thing.
That'd be interesting to find out what the radio people, because I know they influenced very many down the way, the spook shows, the horror hosts, and any of these anthology shows that came along later, absolutely. Without a doubt, you know, the radio had a huge impact on what was to follow. So thanks everyone for coming in to listen live, everyone being Evil Annie, I suppose, and there's always a few others that we can't see, but they don't necessarily log into the chats, but the statistics indicate there are people listening that we can't see or touch or feel. So thanks again, and we will see you next week right here on Eerie House Radio. Bye-bye. 4, 3, 2, 1. There we go. My timing is a little off.
I love what you have. top of that. Infinity, nah, nah.
Infinity, nah, nah?
Yeah, didn't you have it up on the time bar? When it goes the full 1 hour, 16 seconds, and then it said infinity, nah, nah.
Oh, really? I don't see that. That's
okay,
weird.
Well, that's... what's in my Mountain Dew here, I wonder?
I don't know. You should be it's the holidays, man. You should be having a little...
Give me the eggnog.
I just can't bring myself to... I can't bring myself to do eggnog.
You know, yeah, I don't even... I've never had any, and what you buy in the store is not what eggnog used to be. So
it's a lost art.
It's one of those, it's a mystery drink, yes.
Yeah, it's like fruitcake. What the hell is really in it?
Who is it that said there's only like 12 fruitcakes in the world and everyone just keeps giving that to each other?
I don't know, but that seems like that could be true. That may not be an urban legend.
It may not be. I think the fruitcake is the urban legend.
I don't know. On my last turn with one, it had hair on it, so,
Definitely one of the older ones.
Get rid of that. There's a horror story, getting a fruitcake. Oh. Now, rum cake is different. We actually had this woman bring rum cake, and she made it with 151. And, oh, my God, when she opened the package that the cake was in, I mean, you could just smell the alcohol steaming off of this cake. And everybody,
right,
in the office was, everybody in the office was a little giddy that afternoon.
I would think so. Would lead to not a lot of work being done, that's for sure.
Oh, no, the work got done. I work in an industry where you kind of have to keep busy, which is good for me. I like to be challenged, and it makes the time go faster so I can get back and torture my family and work on fun things like Erie House.
Well, now you've got a little bit more time to work on another show, Dale, of the Spook House, Spook Show.
Oh, the Spook Show, yeah. I haven't done one in a while. Yeah, until I find a replacement station, I do have a little bit of time. I can throw something together. Got the wheels turning on a few things. My next movie is supposed to be, oh gosh, where did I leave off? hold on, I'll tell you in just a minute. Cosmos, War of the Planets. Jeez. That is
that's the Turkish Star Wars? Is that what that one is?
It's got this giant robot thing, and it's pretty dull. John Richardson is in it from, 1 million BC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's got that. That's about it.
Some people are pretty desperate for a paycheck, huh?
Yeah. And it was probably made around pretty close to a little bit after maybe 1 million BC. You wouldn't think so on this movie's budget. But it's a turkey. And have some space-oriented skits to go with that one, too. Well, that could be fun. So that'll be the next Spook Show, War of the Planets.
There's a lot of fun movies out there. A lot of fun movies out there. Some of them are just so bad, that's what makes them funny.
Yeah, this is one of them. It's one that you have to punish with sound effects, because it's the only way I think an audience can stay awake through it. Because it's
well, but when you think of it, didn't we kind of drift off and either just do something else or fall asleep, and you wake up your brother and said, hey, we'll hand a big chucker back. Come on, wake up, wake up. You know, we always wanted their skits and what they were doing and what they were saying and stuff, and far more than actually watching the movie, heaven forbid.
Oh, God. I was looking in the production file for Cosmos War of the Planets. Do-over. I started a show and got kind of sidetracked when Erie House first came up and running, but time to go back and finish it, because there's so many other things I want to do too, and the opportunity to do not just green screen but other types of effects to have a little bit of fun. I've always loved special effects. That's what drew me to the genre.
Yeah.
You know, what made it look real? How did they do that? Well, especially when it's something really inventive. Do you remember the film I Married a Monster from Outer Space?
No.
If you ever get a chance to see that, it has a really neat effect where this like cloud envelops someone. And when you think of when they made the film in the mid-50s, you know what I mean? It's not like you had CGI. It's not like you had all these optical effects, but it was a neat effect of like a cloud. And it was almost reminiscent of how Spielberg used, the effects people for Close Encounters used a lot of clouds in the sky. It was kind of like that. And it would envelop like the victim when they were taken over their body to become aliens.
Wow.
It was like, you know, for such a low budget film, it was a very good effect.
You know, when you couldn't afford the special effects, then you probably just had to try and make it up like you. That's the thing about The Outer Limits. There were so many of those that where they had to actually make up their own special effects as they were going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorite episodes of Outer Limits. I think it's called... I can't remember the title of it. Anyway, there's this alien who can be seen with special glasses. And this scientist is actually trying to help this alien return to his own dimension or whatever. And he has to make like an eye out of special crystal for this creature. And it's a neat story where it's a benevolent alien, but other people think he's not benevolent because he's kind of like a power unleashed and are trying to destroy him. And the protagonist is trying to help him. And there's a character named Kowalski who gets killed, so it's got that going for it.
but at least they brought him back to life in the Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Yes.
Kowalski, he was, because they just called him Ski in the show most of the time.
Yeah, wasn't he always in sick bay, though, for one reason or another? He got injured a lot?
Oh, if he got injured a lot, yeah, you know, the steam pipe would go on him, or he'd burn himself, or something would knock him out. Yeah, you're right. He spent half his time in sick bay.
Yeah, like the monsters always conked him one, or like you said, something happened, the machinery, he got steamed and passed out, whatever.
Isn't that interesting how that show transformed? The first year, when it was a black and white, it was almost all about espionage in the Cold War. And before you know it, it was about Monster of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
the
next year you would see that monster on the walkthrough on Lost in Space.
I know you've talked about it before, but I just love all the Irwin Allen shows. You know, when I think about it, you had Lost in Space, you had Land of the Giants, you had Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Oh, gosh. Time Tunnel.
Poseidon movie. That was him.
Yeah.
Poseidon.
He did a number of the adventure, the disaster films, Poseidon Adventure. Didn't he do Earthquake too, or something like that?
He may have. I'll have to take another look at that if he did. I have
a
deep respect for his productions and his ability to pull shows together.
Yeah, reminds me a little bit of George Pal. He did a lot with miniatures and did practical effects. I mean, in some of George Pal's movies, they did some animation. Of course, he did a lot of stuff early with Harryhausen, but, with the puppetoons and all that. But
right, yeah.
But he did a lot of practical type effects. You know, those huge models they built for Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, the Sea View, and what was the little ship called? It had its own name.
Or the Flying Sub. What was that?
Sometimes I think they
did
call it the Flying Sub, but it had a name. I can't remember. But any of those types of shows, Land of the Giants, Lost in Space, The Craft, were always, pretty large. They were miniatures, but they were rather large, to give a better impression of size.
The Flying Sub wasn't that what they used in the Land of the Giants as their spacecraft?
I think it was very similar, now that you mention it. They probably did retool it for that show. It wouldn't surprise me if they had. they tried too much to be like Lost in Space on Land of the Giants, I think.
Yeah. I was looking to see if I could come up with the other name for it, but I didn't see it. So it's out there. It's out there in the internet land, but
it just eludes me. I thought they had a name for it, like the Lost in, Star Trek. They had their own little ships.
Right. And each one had, because they had several of those on Star Trek, but they only had one on the Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
Lost in Space had one, too. I think it was called the Space Pod, if I'm not mistaken. It looked very much like
that. Yeah, and that was actually the stand-up in that one. That was kind of different.
Yeah, it looked a lot like the Lunar Module, kind of.
Yeah, actually, you're right, it did.
It had legs very similar. And I don't know if I don't know if they were following the space program. When Ray Harryhausen did First Men in the Moon, that was in 64 or 65, very comparable to the United States moon landing. They also had a pod that landed, and it was not too dissimilar from what actually happened 5 years later.
That's true. Well, I think even when it ended, we just landed on the moon, because I remember there being, I think, talking about the moon landing, the actual moon landing at the end of, because when did Lost in Space go off the air?
I want to say about 66, 67. 67 might have been the last year.
Okay, then they couldn't have done that, but I was just thinking that was it was on, it started in 65.
Yep.
In here to see. It was on for three seasons, so it ended in 68. So that was before we landed on the moon. So I remember hearing the story of I'm not sure who told it, but they were talking about how Dr. Smith, Irwin Allen, went up to him one day because he was throwing these lines like a bubble-headed booby, and all he kept coming up with different lines to describe things, not what he had written for it. And I guess at one point Irwin Allen came up to him in the second season and says, "I know what you're doing, and keep it up." Because that campiness. When it was the straight, almost science fiction thing where he was the villain, was not near as popular as when it became very campy.
And there's the Jupiter 2 now.
Jupiter 2.
There it is. A flyby. Right here on Erie House Radio. Well, David,
wow.
Thanks so much for calling in. That about wraps it up here.
Right. You owe me an eggnog.
Yeah. And listeners, be here next week for Erie House Radio. And also, you have to be here in 2 weeks for the launch of Retro Radio.
Hey, it'll be great.
Yes, it will. Because you'll be here.
Yeah, well, that won't make it great, but I'll be here anyway.
That'll be fun. All right, folks, thanks for listening in. We'll see you next time on Erie House Radio. Bye-bye.